the food, even though he's been a whole day without it. I reach out and pet his pathetic head.
Are you sad?
I've never seen a grieving pet before. I didn't even know they could grieve.
Well, you can stay here as long as you need to. I'll try to hide you from my father as long as I can, but you better not bark all night.
As soon as I stand up, Wolfgang lifts himself off the ground just far enough to reach his food bowl. He sniffs the food and then the water, but he lies back down again and whimpers. Luck appears next to me.
Has he eaten that brand before?
He's still holding his suitcase, trash bag, and backpack. I look back at the house.
Why didn't you just leave your stuff inside?
He looks down at his stuff and shrugs. He nods his head toward the dog.
What's wrong with him? Is he dying?
No. His owner died yesterday. He showed up in the middle of the night last night because he used to live here.
That's impressive,
Luck says, tilting his head.
What's your name, dog?
Wolfgang's eyes scan over Luck, but he doesn't move.
He can't answer you. I think that goes without saying, but I'm not convinced Luck comprehends how reality works.
His name is Wolfgang.
What?
Luck grimaces.
That's a terrible name. He should have been named Henry.
Obviously. I'm being sarcastic, but again, I'm not sure Luck comprehends that level of communication.
Are you in mourning?
Luck asks Wolfgang.
Will you stop asking the dog questions?
Luck looks at me perplexed.
Are you always this angry?
I'm not angry. I turn and walk toward the house.
Well, you aren't not angry,
he mutters from behind me. Once we're inside the house, he follows me to quarter two. I take him to the spare bedroom across the hall from me.
You can stay in the guest room.
I open the door and pause in the doorway.
Or not.
There's stuff all over the guest room. Shoes on the floor, the bed is unmade, there are toiletries on the dresser. Who's staying here? I walk to the closet and open the door to find several of Sagan's shirts hanging up.
You've got to be kidding me. How could my father allow him to sleep in the same house as her? This is further proof that he doesn't care. He doesn't even care if Honor gets knocked up at 17.
Luck slides past me and walks to the wall opposite the door. Several sketches are lying on the dresser. He focuses on a sketch of a man hanging from a ceiling fan by a string of feathers.
Looks like I have a very morbid roommate.
You don't have a roommate, I say. He doesn't live here. I don't know why all his stuff is here.
Luck picks up a toothbrush on the nightstand.
You sure he doesn't live here?
You can sleep in my father's office.
I have Luck follow me to the end of the hallway.
There's a sofa bed in here. When Sagan leaves, you can have the guest bedroom.
His name is Sagan?
Luck follows me into the room and drops his backpack on the sofa.
I can see why you find him intriguing. His art is interesting.
I don't find him intriguing.
He laughs.
You said in the car that you found him intriguing. Is Sagan not the guy who's dating your sister?
I close my eyes and release a frustrated breath.
I only told him that because I never thought I'd see him again.
Luck props his suitcase against the desk and looks around the room.
It's not much, but it's already better than where I've been sleeping.
You better not repeat that, I say to him. He looks at me like I'm the weird one of the two of us.
That this is better than where I've been sleeping?
No, the other thing. I only told you about my sister's boyfriend because I didn't think I'd ever see you again.
Luck smiles.
Relax, Merritt. Your love life doesn't interest me enough to repeat it.
I don't know why, but I believe him.
Thanks. You want a tour of the house?
He nods.
Eventually.
I'd like to unpack first.
Okay.
I turn, expecting him to want privacy, but instead he says, "Why is there a statue of Jesus Christ on the living room wall?" He opens his suitcase and begins pulling out clothes. Or better yet, why is he dressed like a Packers fan? "This used to be a church." I take a seat on the sofa and watch as he unpacks. "Is your father a preacher or something?"
"Quite the opposite, actually."
"What's the opposite of a preacher? An atheist mime?"
"My dad doesn't believe in God, but he got a good deal on the church, so he moved us in a few years ago, right before he started sleeping with my mother's nurse."
He glances over his shoulder.
"Your father sounds like an asshole."
I chuckle. "You're being way too kind." Luck pulls a shirt out of his suitcase and walks it to the closet.
"What happened after your mom found out about the affair?"
"He divorced her and married his mistress."
"I guess the mistress would be my sister."
I nod.
"How do you not know any of this? Has it been that long since you last saw Victoria?"
He walks over to the couch and drops down next to me. He falls back against the arm of the couch and props his arms behind his head.
"Why don't you live with your mom?"
"I do. She moved to the basement." I wait for the shock to register on his face, but he just casually raises an eyebrow.
"She lives here, in the basement of this house."
I nod.
"Why did you say your sister abandoned you?"
"It's complicated."
"Where are your parents?"
"Mostly dead," he says, matter of fact. "I should try to get a nap in before she gets here. It's been a while since I've slept."
He does look tired. But I've never seen him before today, so I have no point of reference.
I nod and head for the door.
"Good night."
I step out into the hallway and acknowledge what a weird 24 hours this has been. Pastor Brian dies, Wolfgang returns, I randomly pick up a hitchhiker in a kilt who turns out to be my step-uncle. This day might call for an addition to my trophy collection by the time it's over. As I'm making my way through quarter two, I pause at the door to the guest room. I glance left and right, even though no one is here but Luck and me, and my mother, of course. I open the door and inspect the room Sagan is staying in. I've always been kind of oblivious, but this takes oblivion to a new level. How long has his stuff been here? I just assumed he'd been coming over for breakfast every morning and staying late at night. I'm surprised my father is allowing this, even with how lenient he is sometimes. I sit down on the guest bed and pull his sketchbook onto my lap. I know I shouldn't be looking through his things, but I feel justified since I was out of the loop that we added a new member to the household. I flip through the sketchbook, but all the pages are blank. All of them except for one. In the very back of the sketchbook, there's a drawing of two girls with their arms around each other. After closer inspection, I realize there's more to it than that. My hand goes to my mouth when I realize what I'm looking at. It's a depiction of me and Honor, stabbing each other in the back. Why would he draw this? I flip it over, but this one isn't titled like the one from this morning.
"What are you doing?"
I immediately slide the book off my lap. Sagan is standing in the doorway, which marks the second most embarrassing moment of my life. Funny that they both include him. I don't normally snoop. I don't know how to talk my way out of this. I stand up, painfully aware that I don't know what to do with my hands when I'm this embarrassed. My arms are stiff at my sides. I clench my fists and then unclench them.
"I didn't know you moved in," I mutter.
He steps into the room and his eyes fall to the sketchbook I was just skimming through. His eyes meet mine again. He looks annoyed.
"I've lived here for 2 weeks, Merritt."
2 weeks? Until this moment, I never realized just how much time I spend alone in my room. For 2 weeks, he's been living across the hall from me and no one thought to tell me? He stares at me and I stare right back because I have no idea what else to do. I hate the way he looks. I hate his hair. I especially hate his mouth. His lips are weird. They don't have grooves in them like most lips have. They're smooth and tight, and I hate that every time I look at them, I remember what it was like when they were kissing me. But what I hate the most about him are his eyes. I hate how I feel when I look at them. Not that his eyes are accusatory, but I always get swallowed up in guilt when he's looking at me. Because no matter how much his individual features annoy me, they complement each other very nicely. I look down at my feet and wish the last 5 minutes never happened. I shouldn't have walked in here. I shouldn't have looked at the sketch he drew, and I shouldn't have stared so long at him just now. Because I'd give anything for him to look at me the way he looked at me when he thought I was Honor. The fact that I want that embarrasses me more than being caught in his room. I rush past him, refusing to look at him as I make my way out into the hall. I walk straight to my bedroom door and open it, then slam it shut. I fall onto my bed and I feel the tears as they begin to sting at my eyes. I don't even know why I'm emotional. It's so dumb. What a weird, shitty day. I pull my phone out of my pocket to text my father. I rarely ask him for anything, but this is an emergency. Can you stop by the thrift store on your way here and see if they have any trophies? I wait a few minutes to see if he responds, but he doesn't. Sadly, I'm not surprised. I lie down on my bed, pull my blanket over me, and think about the picture Sagan drew of me swallowing a boat this morning. It's such a strange picture. I hate how much I like it. I hate that no matter how hard I try not to, I like him a little more every day. Part of me wonders if it's actually him I like or if I'm just a jealous person. I've never been jealous of any of Honor's boyfriends before him, but then again, they were all dying. I'm so angry that he's living here now. I was convinced it would be easy to avoid him, but now he's living in the room across the hall from me. I'm going to be subjected to their relationship and to him kissing her and loving her. I know my father doesn't believe in God, but luckily atheism isn't hereditary. I hardly ever pray, but I feel like now is as good of a time as any. I roll onto my back and look up at the ceiling. I clear my throat. God? Not gonna lie. It feels weird talking to the ceiling. Maybe I should kneel, like they do in the movies. I throw the covers off and kneel on the floor against a bed. I lower my head and try it again with my eyes closed. Hey, God. I know I don't pray as much as I probably should, and when I do pray, it's always something selfish. I apologize for that. But I really need your help. I'm sure you saw what happened with my sister's boyfriend a few weeks ago. I can't stop thinking about him. I don't like the person it's turning me into. I've been having these irrational thoughts like maybe he was meant for me and not Honor. Maybe you created him as my soulmate, and because Honor and I are identical, his soul got confused and fell in love with her. Because they're nothing alike. They have nothing in common. She doesn't even like the best parts of him. But even if they were to break up, there's no way it would work out between us. I'd never do that to my sister, and as much as I'm attracted to him, I could never love someone that was once with Honor. It's out of the question. So, I'm not coming to you to ask you to show him the error of his ways. I'm coming to you to ask if you would just send me someone else. Someone who will completely take my mind off him. I don't want to have the thoughts I've been having anymore, or at least I don't want to be having them about my sister's boyfriend. I wouldn't mind having these thoughts about someone else, so yeah, I'm merely asking for an alternative soulmate, or even just a distraction. I don't even care if it has to do with another person. Any interest that isn't Sagan would be great. Whatever you can spare. I open my eyes and then crawl back into bed. Praying is so awkward. Maybe I should do it more. Oh, yeah. Amen.
Chapter 5
Merritt, wake up. I didn't know it was possible to roll my eyes before opening them, but I accomplished this feat. What? I grumble, pulling the covers over my head. You need to wake up, Honor says. She flips on the light to my bedroom. I pull my cell phone out from under my pillow to see what time it is.
It's 6 in the morning, I mutter, annoyed. None of us wake up this early. Not to mention she knows I don't go to school anymore, so what's it matter if I'm awake?
It's 6 in the evening, dumbass. It's your night to take Mom dinner.
She slams the door.
It's 6 in the evening?
Which means it's still today. Shitty today.
Joy.
I spoon mashed potatoes onto a plate next to a piece of blackened chicken. There may not be much about Victoria to like, but her cooking has always been good. I do wonder, though, what it must be like to have to cook extra food every night for your husband's ex-wife who lives in your basement. I spin around to grab a roll for the plate, but I bump into Sagan, who has appeared behind me.
Sorry.
I try to move around him before having to inhale his scent or, God forbid, look at his face. I move left, he moves right. We're still in each other's way. I move right, he moves left. Are you freaking kidding me? He laughs at our little dance, but that's because he can breathe when he's around me. He only loses his breath around Honor. I finally spin and walk the other direction and go around the bar. Right before I reach the basement door, I glance back in the kitchen. Honor is now standing next to her boyfriend, making her plate, but he's staring at me with a quizzical look. He must think I'm such a bitch, especially when something as simple as being in his way happens. I'm not able to laugh it off like he does. I get frustrated and go the other direction.
Merritt?
I'm not even halfway down the stairs, and she can tell it's me. She somehow memorized the footsteps of everyone in the house. I guess when all you do is watch Netflix and play on Facebook, you get pretty good at listening to footsteps.
Yeah, it's me.
She's sitting on the couch when I make it down to the basement. She closes her laptop and slides it to the floor.
What's for dinner tonight?
Chicken and potatoes again. I hand her the plate and take a seat next to her on the couch. She looks at the plate and sets it down on the table next to her.
I'm not really that hungry, she says. I'm trying to lose 10 pounds.
Maybe you should go for a run. The weather is nice.
She frowns.
I think I'm the only one who still tries to encourage her to go outside, but at this point it's not really encouragement. It's more a sarcastic suggestion.
You haven't been down to see me since last week.
She reaches up her hand to brush my hair over my shoulder, but she hesitates before touching me. Her hand falls back to her lap.
Have you been sick?
Frustrated is a better word. The older I get, the harder it is to understand her phobia. I get not wanting to leave your house, but to hole yourself up in a basement for years while your children continue to live their lives upstairs seems more like the world's longest temper tantrum than a social phobia.
Yeah, I haven't been feeling well, I say.
Is that why you've been out of school?
I narrow my eyes a bit, wondering how she knows I haven't been going to school.
Your principal called today to check on you.
Oh. What did you tell him?
She shrugs.
I didn't answer my cell phone. He left a voicemail.
I let out a quiet sigh of relief. At least the school doesn't know the extent of her social phobia. They still call her before calling our father whenever an issue arises. My mother tosses the blanket off her lap and stands up.
Can you mail something for me tomorrow?
She walks the length of her living room, all 4 feet of it, and grabs an empty box from her shelf.
I have some books I promised I'd get to Shelley.
My mother may not leave the basement, but she's got more friends than Honor and I put together. She's obsessed with reading and has joined several online reading groups. If she isn't watching Netflix, she's reading a book or doing video chats with her book friends. I sometimes walk in on her video chats and she'll introduce me and make me talk to her friends. She tries so hard to put on the air of a normal mother leading a normal life. But sometimes when I'm forced to be in one of her videos, I get the urge to scream, "She hasn't left the basement in 2 years."
Shelley said she mailed me a package last week. It should be here tomorrow.
I'll bring it down when it gets here.
I assure her. She writes an address on the box, and while she has her back to me, it's the first I've noticed of her outfit. She's wearing a black maxi dress that goes all the way to her feet.
Your dress is cute. Is it new?
My mother nods, but doesn't reveal how she got it.
She must order her clothes online because she hasn't had a visitor other than her children and occasionally my father when they need to discuss a parenting issue. It's a shame, too, because she's gorgeous for her age. It doesn't matter that she hasn't left the basement in forever. She still takes very good care of herself. She applies makeup every morning, and her hair is always washed and styled. She probably still shaves her legs every day, which makes no sense, because if I decided to never leave the house again, the first thing I would do is stop shaving. Maybe she's in an online relationship. Normally, I wouldn't advocate for those, but I support anything that might give her motivation to leave the basement in the future. I take the box from her and head toward the stairs. I used to hang out with her for longer periods of time, but it's gotten hard to do that lately. I'm starting to resent her. I used to feel sorry for her and assumed her social phobia wasn't something she could control, but the older I get and the more of my life she misses by choosing to stay in the basement, the angrier at her I am. Sometimes I get so angry when I'm down here I start shaking and have to leave before I explode on her. Which is where things will lead if I don't get out of this basement right now.
See you later, Mom, I say as I head back up the stairs.
Merritt, she says, calling after me.
I let the door to the basement close behind me. Victoria is in the kitchen, cutting up a chicken breast for Moby. Everyone else is already at the table eating. I grab a plate for myself, just as my father walks through the front door. It's 6:30 now, and his football game starts at 7, so he has his dinner plate made before I do. When I finally walk my food to the table, there's only one empty seat left, right next to What's-His-Face. Honor is on the other side of him, leaning into him and laughing at something he just said. I'm sure it was clever, whatever it was. I plop down in my chair and scoot it forward. Moby is seated on my other side, to my relief.
You have a good day? I ask him.
He's shoving a bite of corn in his mouth when he nods.
Tyler got in trouble for saying bastard.
Most of us laugh, but Victoria gasps.
Moby, that's a bad word.
Technically it isn't, my father says. Victoria glares at my father.
It is when you're only 4 and you say it at preschool.
What's a bastard? Moby asks.
A kid born to parents who haven't gotten married yet. That's what you almost were, I reply. You would think I slapped the kid with the way Victoria reacts to my comment. She immediately pushes her chair back and stands up.
Go to your room!
I laugh because at first I think she's kidding, but then I stop smiling because her anger is authentic.
You've got to be kidding me.
I look at my father and he's staring at Victoria, his fork paused in front of his mouth. I look back at Victoria.
He asked what a bastard was. Did you want me to lie to him?
Victoria's eyes are boring into mine. Her nostrils might even be flaring. I've never seen her so mad. I honestly didn't say it out of cruelty.
A bastard is a child born out of wedlock, I say to Victoria.
Isn't that what he almost was?
Victoria points toward the hallway.
You will not speak that way in front of my child, Merritt. Go to your room.
She looks to my father for backup.
Barnaby?
I scoot back and fold my arms over my chest. I'm not backing down.
So you want me to lie to your child?
I look at a wide-eyed Moby.
Since sex is a bad 80s TV show, a bastard is the commercial.
I look at Victoria.
Is that better?
Merritt, Utah says. He says it like I'm the one out of line at this table. I turn my attention to him.
Are you seriously taking Victoria's side now?
Can we please just make it through one meal as a family without a fight breaking out? Honor says, frustrated.
Barnaby?
Victoria says, still standing, still waiting for him to punish me.
My father wraps his hand around Victoria's wrist and tries to get her to sit back down.
I'll deal with her later. Let's just eat, okay?
Victoria snatches her hand away from my father and grabs her plate. She walks toward the kitchen and tosses her food into the trash can.
Save the scraps, I call out to her.
Excuse me? I point to the trash.
The scraps. Wolfgang can eat them.
Wolfgang? My father says.
Why are you bringing up that bastard dog?
And here we go again with that word, Honor mutters.
Is that why there's a bag of dog food by the back door? Utah asks.
My father's eyes move to the bag of dog food. He stands up.
Is that dog here?
I take a bite of my mashed potatoes because I have no idea if I'm about to be sent to my room, but I'm hungry.
He showed up in the middle of the night last night, I say, with a mouthful.
I swallow and throw my thumb over my shoulder.
He's in the backyard.
You let him in the backyard?
My father yells. Victoria throws her hands in the air.
Oh, this is just great. You get angry at her for allowing a dog in the yard, but not for calling your son a bastard?
I hold up my fork.
I said he was almost a bastard, I clarify.
Why do you always do this?
Utah whispers. He's so quiet when he says it, which means he's not directing his question at Victoria on the other side of the kitchen. Surely he isn't talking to me.
You think this is my fault?
It usually is, Honor says. We can't get through one meal without you doing something to piss her off. I laugh incredulously.
And that's my fault?
I raise my voice loud enough for Victoria to hear our conversation.
Maybe she gets pissed off because she's an unreasonable person. Just ask the little brother she abandoned.
I make sure to look at Victoria so I can see her face. Sure enough, that last sentence was a shocker.
What did you just say?
She's looking at me like she either didn't hear me or doesn't want to hear me. I open my mouth to repeat what I said, but my father interrupts me.
Merritt,
he says, more defeated than angry.
Go to your room.
Victoria slowly turns her head toward my father.
You told her about Luck?
He immediately shakes his head.
No, they don't know about Luck. She's pushing your buttons.
Now I'm dying to know what she doesn't want us to know. I take two more quick bites of my potatoes in case I'm forced to carry out my punishment.
I'm not pushing her buttons.
I swallow and wipe my mouth and then prepare to explain myself. Not that I should be required to do so. Wolfgang showed up here last night. It was raining and I felt bad for him, so I let him in the backyard. Then I found out Pastor Brian died and forgot to tell any of you about the dog. I went to Tractor Supply to get dog food today, and this weird guy in a kilt asked me for a ride to his sister's house, which turned out to be this house. His name is Luck. He's Victoria's little brother, and he's asleep in Dad's office, since Sagan apparently lives in the guest room now. And like it or not, the definition of a bastard is a child born out of wedlock, and in case any of you forgot, Victoria got pregnant while Dad was still married to Mom, so Moby was practically a bastard. When I finish my explanation, everyone is quietly staring at me. I face forward and give my full attention to my food.
He was wearing a kilt?
Sagan asks. As much as I wish he wasn't talking to me, I appreciate him trying to ease the tension with humor.
What color was it?
I force myself to look across the table at him. A small smile plays across his lips.
Green plaid.
He nods appreciatively.
Can't wait to meet him.
My brother is here,
Victoria says. Her voice is much quieter now.
Luck is here in this house?
I start to respond, but I don't have to because Luck is now standing at the end of the hallway.
Technically, it's not a house,
he says to her.
It looks more like a misunderstood church.
I'm starting to understand what Luck meant about conversations being a ping-pong match, because we're all looking back and forth between Luck and Victoria,
waiting for the emotional reunion. Victoria's hand goes up to her mouth. My father walks up to her and puts his hands on her shoulders, trying to take her attention away from her little brother.
"Sweetie," he says soothingly, "let's go talk it out with him in the bedroom."
Victoria shakes her head and pushes past my father toward Luck.
"You can't just show up unannounced, Luck. You need to leave."
Luck doesn't move. He looks a little surprised by her reaction.
"You aren't going to hug me first?"
Victoria takes a step closer to him.
"Leave," she says. "And next time you want to show up without apologizing first, try calling. It'll save you money on travel."
"Victoria,"
my father says in a whisper. He pulls her in the opposite direction.
"Go to the bedroom. I'll be there in a second."
She immediately starts trying to hide the fact that she's sniffling a bit when she walks away from Luck toward their bedroom. My father faces Luck. Luck smiles and walks toward him with his hand out.
"You must be my brother-in-law,"
Luck says. My father reluctantly shakes his hand.
"Barnaby."
"I honestly thought she'd be over it by now,"
Luck says.
"She's right. Maybe I should have called first."
"Be over what?" Honor asks. Luck swings his gaze to Honor and he gives her a familiar smile, but then his smile disappears when he notices me. He looks back at Honor, then back at me, then he points between us.
"Which one of you gave me a ride today?"
I lift my hand.
"Thank you for the hospitality, Merritt."
Luck walks toward the table. He introduces himself to Utah, Honor, and then Sagan. When he gets to Moby, he kneels down in front of him.
"You must be my nephew."
"I'm a nephew?"
Moby asks.
"Merritt said I'm a bastard."
"Almost a bastard," I correct.
"Luck,"
my father says, interrupting the introductions.
"Can we please sort this out first before you make yourself at home?"
Luck stands up and puts his hands on his hips.
"Yeah, sure. But I just woke up from a 4-hour nap. Kind of already made myself at home."
He laughs, but he's the only one laughing. I have to hand it to him. Luck is cheerful, if anything. He follows my father to quarter three. I'm sad they're moving the conversation out of quarter one. I was enjoying it.
"Sounds like your day was productive," Honor says to me. "At least you weren't wasting away your entire life by sleeping all day."
I can put up with a lot, but Honor's snarky attitude about my decision to stop going to school is my boiling point. I toss my roll back on my plate.
"Tell me, Honor, what have I missed this week that's going to miraculously prep me for life beyond high school?"
"An opportunity to graduate, maybe?" I roll my eyes.
"I can get a GED before Christmas."
"Yes, because that's a reasonable alternative to a scholarship," she says.
"You want to talk to me about reasonable?" I challenge. "Does your new boyfriend know how reasonable you've been when it comes to your past relationships?"
Honor's jaw clenches. I've hit a nerve. Good. Maybe she'll back off.
"That's not fair, Merritt," Utah says.
"Whatever," I mutter. I tear off a piece of my bread and pop it in my mouth. "Of course you're going to defend her. She's your favorite." Utah leans back in his chair.
"I don't have a favorite sister. I'm defending her because you always get too personal with your attacks."
I nod.
"Oh, right. I forgot. We like to sweep things under the rug and pretend Honor doesn't need therapy."
Honor glares at me from across the table.
"And you wonder why you have no friends."
"Actually, I don't wonder that at all."
The raised voices coming from quarter three interrupt our sibling bonding. It's too muffled to make out what they're saying, but it's clear that Luck and Victoria aren't having the homecoming Luck was hoping for.
"Did anyone else notice how strange his accent was?" Sagan asks.
"Thank you," I say. "It's so weird. It's like his brain can't decide if he grew up in Australia or London."
He sounded Irish to me, Utah says. Sagan shakes his head.
Nah, that was just the kilt playing tricks on you.
I laugh and then glance down at Moby, who is still seated next to me. He's looking down, so I can't see his face. Moby? He doesn't look up, but he sniffles.
Hey, why are you crying?
Moby sniffles some more and then says,
Everyone is fighting.
Ugh. Nothing can make me feel worse than when Moby is upset.
It's okay, I say. Sometimes adults fight. It doesn't mean anything.
He wipes his eyes on his shirt sleeve.
Then why do they do it?
I wish I had an answer for him.
I don't know, I say with a sigh. Come on, let's wash up and I'll tuck you in.
Moby has always been a great sleeper. He's been sleeping in his own bedroom in quarter two since he was two. His bedtime has always been 7, but I heard Victoria tell him a few days ago that she would change it to 8 in a few weeks. The rest of us don't really have a bedtime. My father likes us to be at the house on school nights by 10, but once we're in our rooms, he never checks on us. I'm rarely ever in bed before midnight. I take Moby to the bathroom and help him brush his teeth and wash his hands. His bedroom is right across the hall from where Luck is staying, which, by the sound of the shouting continuing in the other room, might be my father's office again within the hour. Victoria puts Moby to bed most nights, but occasionally he'll ask for Honor, Utah, or me to do it. I enjoy tucking him in at night, but I only do it when Moby specifically asks for me. I don't like to do Victoria any unnecessary favors. Moby's room is whale-themed, which I hope changes before he starts having sleepovers. It's bad enough he was named after a murderous whale, but for Victoria to actually go so far as to extend the theme to his bedroom is just asking for Moby to get bullied. Moby likes the whales, though. He also loves that he was named after a whale. Moby Dick is Victoria's favorite book. I also don't trust people who claim for a classic to be their favorite novel. I think they're lying just to sound educated, or they simply haven't read another book beyond high school English requirements. My favorite book is God-Shaped Hole. It's not a classic. It's better than a classic. It's a modern-day tragedy. I've never read Moby Dick, but I can almost bet it doesn't leave you feeling like you have less skin than before you opened the book. I tuck Moby into his bed, pulling the whale-themed blanket up to his chin.
Will you read me a story?
He asks.
It's not entirely inconvenient, so I nod and grab a book from his bookshelf.
I choose the thinnest one, but Moby protests.
No, read The King's Perspective.
That's a new one.
I glance back at the bookshelf and scan through them, but I don't see one with that title.
It's not here. How about Good Night, Moon?
That's for babies, he says.
He picks up a stack of pages from the table beside his bed.
Read this one. Sagan wrote it.
He shoves it toward me. I take the pages from him. They're stapled together in the top left corner. In the center of the front page, it reads, The King's Perspective, by Sagan Katan. I sit down on the edge of the bed and run my fingers over the top of the page.
Sagan wrote you a story?
Moby nods.
It's a true story, and it rhymes.
When did he give you this?
Moby shrugs.
Like 7 years ago?
I laugh.
Moby is the smartest 4-year-old I know, but he cannot, for the life of him, grasp the concept of time.
I move to the spot next to Moby and sit against the headboard.
I normally don't make myself this comfortable when it comes to tucking him in, but I might be more excited about story time than Moby is tonight.
I feel like I'm in on one of Honor's boyfriend's secrets, and it makes me way more excited than it should. I pull my knees up and rest the pages on my thighs.
The King's Perspective, I say aloud.
I glance down at Moby.
Do you even know what perspective means?
He nods and rolls over onto his side so that he's facing me.
Sagan said it's kind of like putting someone else's eyeballs inside your own head.
Pretty close, I say.
I'm impressed.
I am impressed.
Not so much with Moby, but with Sagan for taking the time to write him a story, and for obviously explaining its meaning. Moby sits up and flips the page for me.
Read it!
On the next page is a picture of a bird. It looks like a cardinal.
Is the story about a bird?
I ask Moby.
Just read it, he says.
I flip the page again.
Fine, no spoilers. The King's Perspective. There's a story of a king, and this story is very true. Some say it's just a rumor, some say it's just a ruse. They called the man King Flip, but that wasn't really his name. His name was Philip Hellitus, but that's too hard to say. King Flip had a penchant for really expensive things. He liked anything shiny and anything with bling. He had the nicest castle out of all the lands, but that didn't stop him from wanting one even more grand. So he bought a town called Perspective and made the people build him a castle at the top of their highest mountain. He didn't care if it was a hassle. When the work was finally done, he decided to go inspect it, but when he arrived in the town of Perspective, it was exactly as he'd left it. He couldn't find a castle. It wasn't on the mountain. It wasn't on the beach. It wasn't on the mainland. He immediately grew angry and sought his just revenge on all those who had fooled him on the town his army did descend. When the people were all dead, a red cardinal then appeared.
King Flip, what have you done? You killed good people, I do fear.
King Flip tried to explain that the town deserved to die, for his castle was never built, or he would see it with his own eyes. The bird said,
But King, you merely assumed. You didn't even try. Look from a different perspective. Don't just look from your own two eyes.
The bird then led him over to where the castle should surely be. He then moved aside a boulder, and King Flip fell to his knees. For inside the mountain was the castle, the most magnificent one ever built. King Flip couldn't believe his eyes. He quickly became wrecked with guilt. He had killed so many people, people he should have protected, simply because he couldn't see the castle from their perspective.
"Hide their bodies," King Flip yelled. "Hide every last one. Put them inside the mountain, and then close the doors for good."
The king's army hid the bodies, and King Flip fled the land. He went back to his old castle and never spoke of Perspective again. Some say this story isn't true. Some say the town never existed. But look at any map and you'll see there is no longer a town called Perspective. I flip back to the first page of the poem, a little in shock by what I just read.
This is a children's poem? This is just as morbid, if not more morbid, than the art he creates, and the fact that Moby now believes it's a true story. You know this is fiction, right?
I look down at Moby, but his eyes are closed. I didn't even notice he had fallen asleep while I was reading. I place the story back on his nightstand. I turn off the light before I leave the room and head straight to quarter one. Sagan is in the kitchen helping Honor wash the dishes.
What is wrong with you?
They both look up at me, but I'm staring at him.
Is that an open-ended question? He asks.
You slaughtered an entire town of innocent people.
He nods as registration marks his expression.
Oh, you read to Moby. That's disturbing. It's his favorite story now.
What are you talking about?
Honor asks me. I flip a hand in her morbid boyfriend's direction.
He wrote a poem for Moby, but it's the worst children's story I've ever read.
It's not that bad, he says in defense.
It has a good message.
Does it?
I ask, flabbergasted.
Because the message I got was that a materialistic ruler wasn't happy with the peasants he hired to build his castle, so he slaughtered them all, hid their bodies in a mountain, and went on with his happy life.
Honor makes a face to show how disturbed she is. I make it a point never to make that expression. Seeing it on her lets me know how unappealing it would be on me.
You completely missed the message, then, he says. It's a poem about perspective.
What are we talking about? Utah asks as he walks into the kitchen.
The story I wrote for Moby.
Utah laughs as he grabs a soda from the refrigerator.
I loved that story, he says, right before he takes a sip.
He wipes his mouth.
I can't listen to this all night,
he says, referring to the arguing still coming from quarter three.
Wanna go swimming?
We're in, Honor says, referring to Sagan and herself. Anything to get out of this house. They all look at me. No one verbally invites me, but with the way they're all looking at me, I assume this is their way of asking if I'd like to come along.
I'm good,
I say, turning down their nonverbal invite. I've never gone swimming at the hotel with Honor in Utah before. It's gotten to where they don't even invite me, but since I'm standing right in front of them, they probably feel pressured. When I turn them down, Honor almost looks relieved.
Suit yourself,
she says, tossing the dish towel on the counter. Sagan is still looking at me, but with a touch of curiosity in his expression.
You sure you don't want to come?
He asks. The fact that he looks like he'd appreciate my company makes me want to change my mind. With Honor in Utah, it's obvious they prefer to hang out without me. They don't find my presence an added bonus. To them, my presence is an inconvenience. But the way he's staring at me, it seems he might actually value my presence. It confuses me. It makes me want to go swimming with my siblings for the first time since they started going, the day Utah got his license. The bedroom door to quarter three opens and Luck appears. He walks into the kitchen with his hands shoved in his pockets. My father and Victoria are close behind. My father clears his throat and he addresses all of us.
Luck will be staying with us for a while. Victoria and I would appreciate it if you would all make him feel welcome.
It's odd because even though it seems Luck won this argument, his demeanor says otherwise.
Welcome,
Utah says to him.
Feel like going swimming?
You have a pool?
Luck asks. Utah shakes his head.
No, but there's a hotel in town with an indoor heated pool, and Honor has connections.
Nice,
Luck says.
Let me grab some shorts.
He begins to walk out of the kitchen, but turns to me.
You're coming too, right?
Luck says this as if it's a plea not to leave him stranded with the rest of my siblings. I'm the only one he's had any interaction with beyond an introduction. I nod.
Yeah, I'll come.
Sagan is just about to round the corner when he hears me accept Luck's invite. He looks over his shoulder at me with a moment of pause, but then continues walking.
Where's Moby?
Victoria asks. I put him to bed already. I let that be the end of our conversation as I head toward my room. Earlier today I was regretting running into Luck at the store, but now it seems I might finally have a friend in this house. I never go swimming with Utah and Honor because they never seem to want me to, but I'm afraid if I don't go tonight, Luck will bond with the three of them and I'll be odd man out again. I grab a one-piece and an oversized T-shirt and head back into the hallway. Sagan is walking out of his room and pauses when he sees me. He opens his mouth, but before he says whatever he's about to say, Honor opens her door. His mouth clamps shut. Now I'll be wondering what he was about to say for the rest of the evening. They follow Utah and Luck outside. I stop by the bathroom and grab a few towels. Before I reach the front door, I look up at the statue of Jesus Christ. I wonder if God answers prayers before they're asked of him. Is that why Luck is here? Is he the distraction from Sagan that I prayed for earlier?
Are you responsible for his sacrilegious outfit?
My father's voice jolts me from my thoughts. He's standing a few feet away, staring at the statue.
Nope, I lie. It must have been an immaculate conception of wardrobe.
I go to close the front door and I hear my father's muffled voice from the other side.
If the Cowboys lose, you're grounded.
The Cowboys' chances of losing are good.
the chances of my father actually following through with a threat are not.
Chapter 6. One of the most utilized vehicles in our driveway is the Ford Windstar. It holds 7 people, but at the rate our household is growing this month, we'll need an upgrade soon. I was the last one to the van, but Honor's boyfriend sat in the back and left one of the middle bucket seats open for me. Luck is in the other one. Honor is in the front passenger seat, and Utah is driving. We live in the middle of nowhere, in a town too small to be significant enough for a hotel with a pool. It's 12 miles to the nearest store, and even farther to the hotel we're heading for. This will be at least a 15-mile drive, but in a rural area like this, it'll only take 13 minutes to get there.
So, Utah says, you're Victoria's brother?
Half-brother, he specifies. I chuckle under my breath because he seems to want to claim Victoria as much as we do.
Where are you from?
Everywhere, Luck says.
Victoria and I have the same father, different mothers. She lived with her mom and I lived with our father and my mother. We moved around a lot until my parents divorced.
Sorry to hear that, Honor says.
It's fine. Happens to everyone, he says, matter of fact.
No one follows that comment up with a question.
You didn't tell me you had an identical twin, Merritt,
Luck says, directing his attention to me.
You talked the whole time we were in the car, I respond, looking away from him and out the window. Wasn't much room to fit in my whole life story.
Not true, because your life story was precisely what I was trying to get out of you,
he says with a laugh.
And you didn't get very far, did you?
Far enough to know all about the guy you have a crush on, he says.
My head snaps in his direction. I raise an eyebrow in warning, letting him know he went too far with that comment.
Wait,
Honor says, turning around in her seat. She looks at me.
You have a crush on someone?
I roll my eyes and look out the window again.
No.
Who is it?
Honor says, directing her question at Luck. I scratch at my jeans nervously, hoping he doesn't open his mouth. I don't know him at all. He might get a kick out of embarrassing me.
I can't remember his name, Luck says.
Ask Merritt.
Honor turns back around in her seat.
Merritt doesn't tell me things like that.
Her voice is accusatory. I glance at Luck and he's staring at me.
You two have a weird dynamic for identical twins.
No, we don't. I disagree. There's a false stigma attached to twins.
Exactly, Honor says in agreement. Not all twins have things in common beyond their appearance.
I think you two have more in common than you think,
Sagan says from the back seat. Honor glances over her shoulder and glares at him.
I'd like to turn around and glare at him, too, but I actually feel things when I look at him, unlike Honor.
I don't even know if Honor is attracted to him. She doesn't look at him like I would look at him if he were my boyfriend. And if he were my boyfriend, I'd be sitting in the back seat with him and not in the front seat, where Honor is sitting. I feel bad for him. He's got so much more invested in this relationship than she does. I could tell that simply by the way he kissed me when he thought he was kissing her. He's moved in and committed, and she's just waiting around until a less healthy guy comes along.
Luck turns around and faces Honor's boyfriend. How do you fit into this family?
He fits in with me, Honor says from the front seat, answering Luck's question that was actually posed to Sagan.
If he were my boyfriend, I'd let him answer his own questions.
How did you and Honor meet?
Luck asks him.
I keep staring out the window, but I listen closely. I've never asked either of them this question directly, so I've only heard bits and pieces from eavesdropping.
I had an allergic reaction to something I ate, Sagan says. Ended up in the hospital, and that's where I met Honor.
Luck faces forward.
Were you in the hospital, too?
He asks Honor. Honor just shakes her head, but she doesn't elaborate on why she was in the hospital. I have half a mind to tell Luck that Honor was there saying goodbye to yet another boyfriend when she unknowingly set her sights on Sagan, incorrectly assuming he was about to meet his demise.
Honor was visiting a friend,
Sagan says, now answering for Honor. They can't answer their own freaking questions. No one speaks for a few minutes, even though I have a million questions for Luck and a million more for Sagan. When we pull into the long driveway of the hotel, Utah finally throws a question over his shoulder.
Why does your sister hate you so much?
Half-sister, Luck clarifies. She's still mad at me for something I did over 5 years ago.
What'd you do?
Honor asks, unbuckling her seatbelt.
I killed our father.
My hand pauses on my seatbelt. I look up, and Luck unbuckles his seatbelt and slides open the minivan door. He gets out, but the rest of us are paralyzed by his last comment. Once he's outside the van, he straightens out his kilt and then looks back inside at all of us.
Oh, come on, I'm kidding!
Honor exhales.
That's not funny, she says, throwing open her door.
When we get inside, Honor walks up to the front desk and rings the bell. A few seconds later, one of Honor's friends from school, Angela Capici, appears from the back office. I never liked Angela. She was a year ahead of us in school, but she and Honor have been casual friends since we were kids. Being as though most of our friends aren't allowed over at our house due to the rumors, founded or not, about our family, the friendships Honor and I form with other people are almost always casual. I keep more to myself than Honor does. I'm not as good at hiding my distaste, and I've always distasted Angela. She's the type of girl who allows the attention from guys to value her worth. And from the way she's eyeing Luck right now, she must be in need of a little valuing.
Hey, she says to him with a flirty grin. You're new.
Luck nods and returns her flirtatious smile.
Fresh off the boat.
She raises an eyebrow, unsure of how to respond to his comment. She looks back at Honor.
My shift ends at 11. If you guys are still here, I'll join you.
We have to be home by 10, Honor says.
She holds up the key card.
Thanks for this.
Angela nods, bringing her gaze back to Luck.
Anytime,
she says, her voice dripping with invitation. Her eyes remain glued to Luck as we make our way toward the bathrooms to change. Honor and I walk into the girls, and she immediately pulls her shirt off and begins changing without walking into one of the stalls. I'm a bit more modest than she is, and the idea of someone walking into the bathroom while I'm squeezing into my bathing suit is enough to force me into the stall to change. I have my jeans and t-shirt off when Honor says the inevitable.
So who is Luck referring to?
I pause for a moment, then begin pulling on my swimsuit.
What are you talking about?
In the van,
she says, clarifying what I already know.
He said you told him you had a crush on a guy? Do I know him?
I close my eyes and try to imagine the hell that would break loose if I admitted to her that the guy I have a crush on is her boyfriend. It would be the end of what little relationship we have left as sisters. I open the door to the stall, pulling my t-shirt over my head.
He was lying. There's no one. I hardly even leave the house. How would I meet someone?
Honor looks a little disappointed in my answer. She also looks stunning.
Is that a new bathing suit?
I ask her. She's in a red bikini with black trim. It covers her as well as a bikini can cover her, but the color and the cut are perfect. I look down at my oversized t-shirt that's covering up my ill-fitted, plain black one-piece, and I frown.
I've had it a few months,
she says, slipping her hands into the top to push her cleavage together.
You just never come swimming with us, so you haven't seen it.
You know I don't like swimming, I mutter.
Honor folds her jeans and sets them on the sink counter. Our eyes meet in the mirror.
Is that the reason?
Although it would appear otherwise, the question is rhetorical. Honor knows